Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Nintendo Jump Podcast. We are a video game podcast created for Nintendo gamers by Nintendo gamers. It is August 5th, 2021. My name is Kevin, and today I'm joined by one of my favorite people in the universe and also the number one Score Bunny fan of all time, Sergio. What's good, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Doing pretty good, but you know what? This is going to sound silly, but I had a loss earlier today. An old phone of mine, its battery got bloated, and it's time to say goodbye.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was an import from Europe, so I couldn't really sell it. I just used it for, like, to control apps, you know. But, yeah, it's time to go.
Will you give it a proper burial and a very good resting place for it?
If by throwing it in the trash can, if that works, yeah, I did that.
All right, well, segueing to a lighter note. Back by popular demand, you know who it is, one of our favorite people of all time, Laura. What's good? How you doing?
Hey, Kevin and Sergio, nice to be here. You're cracking me up already. My face hurts and it just started. Not for your loss, though, Sergio. That's not funny. I'm sorry about that.
Definitely not. Well, great to have you guys here. And you know, it's awesome because you guys know that one of our favorite things to do on this podcast is to talk about our favorite memes and puns because we love our favorite memes and puns. I said it twice. By default, I'm brave. You know what I mean? This is a new era in NJP. This is an era where we can say these things without having the presence of the ban hammer. And I feel great. Do you guys feel great? Because this is awesome.
I can understand why you feel great, Kevin. I really do.
You know, I've been waiting for this for a long time. I know Kellen has too, but like all things in life, some of these memes and puns could be done in not the best timing. It could be a mistake. And like all things, we are human. We make mistakes. And you know who else makes mistakes? Nintendo. They do. Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe, but they do make mistakes. They have disappointed us in the past. Although there are more of the good that they've done more than the bad, but that's going to be our show today. It's to talk about Nintendo's greatest, most disappointing mistakes of all time. And I think that it's an episode, a topic that, you know, we thought about here and there, maybe not so much, but we're going to tread lightly and hopefully we won't lose any fans because we do love our community, our fans everywhere around the world. But let's break it down. Let's talk about this because it's important. You know, it's not always about the good stuff. It's about the bad stuff too. So I want to just start off with, you know, we may just go for a round. Laura, let's start with you. What is one of Nintendo's greatest mistakes that you would like to talk about?
Well, the timing of this episode was really interesting because I'm back to work, and many of you know I work at a library, and of course I see a book that's like about Nintendo, and I go straight for it. And in it, it talked about the Virtual Boy, which is something that, while I was alive, I wasn't that aware of its presence at the time of release, so I really didn't know that much, and I'm not surprised because it wasn't out for very long. And I was so curious after reading the book. I'm like, what was this about? My son's really interested in virtual reality right now. So I was kind of curious what this precursor was, you know, what it was like. And, do you guys know much about it?
A little bit. I never got a chance to try it out, but I kind of followed it, through video game magazines back in the day when it was about to come out.
Yeah. Well, the guy that created it did a lot of amazing innovations with Nintendo. I think he was even responsible for the D-pad. But he and so everybody was behind this great idea, and it was like this freestanding headset that you would have on the table in front of you and you would lean forward to play. But the display was red and black, which I find hard to believe. And you can watch video footage about it, but whatever you see won't be like what you would have seen had you played, because they can't really right. emulate the 3D effect. But it was, I think it was released in 95 and
right.
was withdrawn by 96. Like, it had such a short lifespan.
Right.
People got sick from playing it. There was a lot of great games. Like, there was a Mario Tennis. I thought both of you might be interested in that. but from what I understand, that is considered one of Nintendo's biggest mistakes. And it was really interesting to learn more about it. One of the things that interests me most about it is I think it was an introduction into bringing in the 3D effect that we saw later in like the DSi or the Nintendo 3DS, you know, and trying to go into two screens, having, you know, kind of creating more of the depth in the imaging. But it didn't, it itself, the Virtual Boy did not work, and it's pales by comparison with what we have today with virtual reality headsets. So
yeah
so that would be my submission to what Nintendo's biggest mistake was.
That's a great one. And to answer your question earlier, I've not had much experience with learning about the Virtual Boy until one of my favorite YouTubers of all time, Angry Video Game Nerd, aka AVGN, talked about it in one episode. And you mentioned Mario Tennis. I've seen footage of it. Even just watching, you know, AVGN play, it didn't feel like virtual reality, because, I mean, technically you are a character like playing tennis, but mm-hmm. also, you know, it wasn't all in all colors. It was using just red and black. And there is a quote I have here from Wikipedia on the Virtual Boy, where they intentionally used red. And there's a quote from Gunpei Yokoi. He says that red uses less battery and red is easier to recognize. So that's probably why they went with that. And it's interesting you mentioned Virtual Boy, because I think this is something that teaches us about what Nintendo has done that didn't really pan out well, but later on they learned from mistakes and created something called the Switch. And I'll tell you why. the Virtual Boy... I mean, virtual reality in general was very, I mean, super into its infancy back then. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo went for it, right? It was very experimental. But, you know, in the end, like you mentioned, they failed and it didn't, like, take off. But this shows you that Nintendo is not the best at taking a new technology head-on at its earliest convenience. And what I mean by that is, you look at VR back then, I mean, it's such a huge risk. And for them to do that was, I mean, took a lot of guts, but it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But then you have something like, you know, the Switch, and I'll tell you why. Because you have the Switch, but you also had the Wii and the Wii U, right? The Wii had mm-hmm. the Wiimotes, the motion controls. So you see how Nintendo really goes from point A to point B to point C as the final cut, right? So point A is like, okay, we're going to try something new. We're not going to go super into the deep end, but we're going to try some of the motion controls and see if people like it, you know, and just try a bit, you know, not go like super deep in like the Virtual Boy back then. And then they went with the Wii U, and then they tinkered a little bit, and then they have the Switch. So they took their time to understand technology of motion controls and things around it, and now they have a piece of a console that we enjoy today that is very, very good. And so I think that's something that Nintendo has done very well. Not so much to get to something head on right away, but more so take their time to understand technology and then execute the plan. So that's why I think the Virtual Boy is very important in the history of video gaming. So,
yeah, true. And I like what you said, Laura, that it was basically an early mistake by Nintendo. If you think about it, it was sort of their first mistake in terms of hardware. The NES was successful, the SNES was successful, and the Game Boy definitely. So, you know, they probably thought, oh yeah, the Virtual Boy, you know, it's a risk, but it's gonna do fine because our other systems have done fine, and then it didn't. So I'm sure it was definitely a learning experience for Nintendo, even as simple as saying, hey, yeah, even, you know, we have good games and we have this reputation at this point. We, you know, Nintendo, people know the name Nintendo and they respect our games and our franchises, but yeah, we can definitely make mistakes. Yeah, the Virtual Boy was, I would say, like the biggest first mistake by Nintendo.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, in terms of consoles not being, you know, as well received, the Wii U gets a lot of flack, which I personally really liked. I went from the Wii, my Wii broke, I upgraded to the Wii U. I was happy that I could play a lot of my same games. And I mean, the controllers were a little metal sometimes, but Nintendo Land really made it for me, you know, getting to load your arrows and playing like Link. I really enjoyed that interface to some degree. However, I think, Kevin, you bring up a really great point about what the Switch has become and that evolution of the motion controls, you know, and that's something that I think Nintendo has really excelled with.
Yeah, and it's amazing, like, just from the past 10 years, how much they are able to grow. And you mentioned the Wii U. I kind of want to get into that.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been waiting.
But before we do, I'm going to take it to Serge. Serge, what is your choice of a mistake that Nintendo has made?
Well, the reason we're talking about this is because this was our weekly question of the week for last week. Mm-hmm. So we did have a few answers from people on our Discord. So I'll go with the first answer, which was by Dragon, and he said, I would like to say something about the lines of breaking their deal with Sony and preventing the creation of the PlayStation, but you could view that as a good thing. I'm also tempted because that could have meant the Final Fantasy would have stayed on the N64. And I think when people think of Nintendo's mistakes, definitely one that comes to mind is their potential deal with Sony, working on a console that I guess would have unified Nintendo and Sony back before the PlayStation was a thing. And that's one of the things that we don't know all the details. We don't know really who's to blame or what really happened. And it's one of those that I would love to know at some point. But I mean, it's been years since that happened and we still don't have, you know, a guaranteed response. So I don't know if we ever will. I think the last I heard is that Nintendo decided to pull back on the deal like at the last second. And that's why Sony was so upset that they said, you know what? Instead of not doing anything, we're actually going to try to compete with Nintendo just to get back at them for pulling the plug, you know, at the very end. And that's how we got the PlayStation, which is kind of crazy. But honestly, Nintendo is kind of known for breaking their deals with other companies, especially back in the day. Nowadays, not so much. They're actually really good with public relations and working with partnerships and all that. But back in the day, it was very, very picky. It was very rare for Nintendo to even work with someone else. So yeah, it's hard to say if it was a mistake. I mean, Nintendo could probably say that they created one of their biggest competitors in a way. I mean, people could look at it that way. What do you guys think?
I think that's really interesting. I don't think that's something I really knew about the history of Nintendo. So I'm happy to learn more about that. But like you said, I think it'd be really interesting to learn more why and the inner workings of that dealing and what made it fall apart, because that might shed some light on, you know, were they going in different directions? I know Nintendo really adheres to that family friendly kind of appeal, whereas Sony and Xbox have gone in a more, you know, looking for an older audience.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's true. And I think another big reason is that Nintendo wanted to stick with cartridges for the N64, or I guess for their next console. Because maybe it's true, but Nintendo feels that it's easier to control piracy if you make the cartridges and they're proprietary. And I believe Sony didn't want that. You know, they wanted whatever system it was going to use, CDs or just compact discs. And I think that was one of the big debates between them that probably led to the creation of PlayStation. Imagine, Kevin, a world without PlayStation. What would you do?
I don't know, man. I wouldn't like it. That's for sure. And I'll tell you why. It's, before I get into that, Sergio, this is a great thing you talked about, and with Dragon as well. It's, I've read a bit about the history, and for those who may or may not know, back then, Nintendo had a monopoly. Like, it wasn't that Nintendo wanted to work with others. People had to work with Nintendo standards, with Nintendo's requirements. It was pretty strict, especially with the licensing agreements and the licensing fees. Anything licensing, it was going to be tough.
Yes.
But if you get onto that list for Nintendo, that Nintendo quality seal of approval, I mean, you're in the money. So I think that was very interesting, because if Sony and Nintendo were to stay together, I'm not sure if we would have the quality of games that we have today, because when you have competition, you have these titans like Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony, there's this inclination to make each other better, you know, to compete, to be the very best that never was. Not Pokemon. Well, I guess Pokemon in a way. But, you know, there's a lot of... There really needs to have this driving factor of competition and to really bring the quality of games to a higher level. And so back in the 90s, I mean, it was a totally different time. And I'm actually pretty glad that we have, you know, series different, like Final Fantasy, right? For example, Final Fantasy, I'm glad that they were hosted on a different platform, because... You know, it gave another company a chance to showcase how it can really be good.
Mm.
But at the same time, you can argue that, well, maybe Nintendo could make it even better. We don't know. We'll never know. But either way, we know that when Nintendo worked with Philips, that wasn't the best choice.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Philips was ready to get into the market. Maybe this was a very new thing for them, but they had to go for it because, you know, video gaming is hot, you know, and it still is. And... we'll never know, but there are books about it. There are conversations about it, but yeah, it's crazy. I would not know what to think if there weren't any Sony. I wouldn't have some of my favorite experiences at gaming conventions, right? I mean, PSX is a wonderful place to be. It's not it's not there at the moment. Hopefully, it'll come back. And for those who may or know, PSX is... It's like E3, but just for Sony. It's incredible. I love it. I have stories about it. I talk about it. Like... whatever chance I can get throughout the podcast in the past years. But anyway, yeah. But no, this is a great topic for sure. It's we'll see. I mean,
and Sergio, you bring up a really great point in terms of, you know, sticking with cartridges versus CDs, because I could see that as being something that people would think of as a mistake, or some, you know, a really good thing that Nintendo did. I mean, I for one think the uniqueness of, you know, having your game cartridges, or as a collector being able to hang on to that, feels more unique. You know, and I never really thought about it before, so I'm really glad you brought up that point. Whereas some people might think, "Oh, you know, I don't want all this junk. I just would rather have my CDs that can be all organized, be the same."
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now we're even moving into a more digital format, and I'm just curious how that plays into it. So, I just think that's a really cool point that could be in Nintendo's favor or be a detraction, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, I mean, who knows where things would have been if Sony, you know, if Nintendo decided to work with Sony, or if Sony just said, okay, well, we're done and we're not going to do anything. So they didn't make the PlayStation. And then maybe Sega could have kept going. Maybe Sega would be one of the two giants, or maybe three, if Microsoft decided to join. I mean, I feel like if Sony wasn't a thing, Microsoft wouldn't be a thing in terms of gaming, but who knows? It's hard to say. It's kind of fascinating in a way how many tangents there could have been by this single what if, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and aren't cartridges more expensive to produce than CDs?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that must have played a factor. I mean, dang, like Nintendo worked really hard to make it really proprietary, but yeah, no, that's, well, that's a big one. That's a big topic for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, we can go to Dragon's second answer because it's related. He mentioned the Nintendo 64 disk drive. He said, "I also think the 64 disc drive is generally a big mistake for that era, where they wasted a lot of time trying to get it running." And that's true. And for those who are not familiar with it, the disc drive was basically an adapter for the N64 that allow you to expand games or to play games using discs, which is interesting because it's what Nintendo didn't want to do initially with the 64. But I guess they saw the success of the PlayStation and they said, hey, we want that too. So I'm with Dragon. I mean, they definitely spent time, resources, research, and money trying to get discs going, and I mean, it didn't do so well. It never even made it outside Japan, and it only had a handful of games, and it was mostly expansions to games, so you still needed the cartridge. It was complicated. It was a bit of a mess. I think it was also a mistake for sure.
It just seems to me that Nintendo just thought, hey, we can do anything. Like, oh, they're doing CDs? Oh, we'll do CDs too. It's like, really? And for who they were back then, I mean, yeah, like, they had all the power in the world to do whatever they wanted, like, in terms of innovation and, you know, just trying to get things, like, out of the water. I mean,
right.
I've actually never heard of the N64 disk drive until now, so this is actually very interesting to hear. But I do have a question about it, though. So, I mean, how long, I mean, was this even in the market? Like, what did they do with it? Like, did it just not ever?
Yeah. It was in the market, I believe. It was only in Japan, and the way you got the games was very specific. I think you actually had to go to the store and like get a disc there, but you could only use it there at the store. You had to take your disc drive. It was complicated. It wasn't easy, and like I said, it was only a handful of games. I know Ocarina of Time had like a bit of an expansion using that. So at least, you know, they used some of their biggest franchises, but even then, it didn't even make it outside Japan.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it lasted very long. It was released in 99 and then discontinued in 2001.
Mm. Oh, wow. That's a very short period. It's like the Virtual Boy.
The end of 99, too. Yeah, excuse me.
Oh, dang. Okay. Yeah, I mean, at least they tried. They tried, but it failed. But you know what? We still love you, Nintendo. All right, well, you know what's coming. Not the Wii U itself. Not the console itself. I'm talking about the marketing of the Wii U, okay?
Yes.
This is, for me, one of the biggest mistakes they've done. When the Wii U came out, I was ridiculously confused as to whether this was an actual new console, whether it's supposed to be a big step up. I mean, in reality, yes, there were some improvements, and you have the gamepad, which is really neat, but I think the way they communicated to the audience wasn't the best. And that when you market it in that way, you're not going to see a lot of sales. And people are going to be like, well, some people could be confused, like, oh, is this like an add-on? Or is it just the Wii U? Like, what? Like, I have the Wii, well, I have to get the Wii U, right? I mean, it's kind of the whole debate of like Nintendo versus Super Nintendo, or the NES versus SNES, right? But in reality, the Wii U is a very good console. It has some great games, some great franchises like Splatoon, and in continuation, you know, Mario Kart and Yoshi and Smash. I mean, there were some really good games there, but the way that they marketed was a failure.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, they wanted to sort of capture the success of the Wii, and they wanted to carry that over, but they wanted to make something new. And I think the name of the system definitely could have been something better. The fact that they use Wii remotes as controller options also added to the confusion of, like you said, Kevin, people knowing, well, is this like an expansion to the Wii? Is it an addition? Is it something else? If it's something else, why does it use the old controllers? It was definitely a bit of a mess. And also the fact that they showed the Wii U at E3 a whole year before it came out. I basically think maybe they announced it too early, but maybe it wasn't their plan. Maybe they were held back because Nintendo wasn't optimized. They weren't too ready to develop modern games in terms of, you know, HD graphics, those games that take more resources, more years to make. That this was Nintendo's transitional console into this sort of development cycle. On the Wii, they carried fine. That was a standard definition system, and they made a lot of games for it, right? But for the Wii U, you could definitely tell there was a drought. So I think they announced it too early because they didn't have the games ready. And that was a bit of a problem for the Wii U overall. It had really good games, but it didn't have a lot of them. And it didn't have a lot of them towards the end, especially. So it was Nintendo's sort of learning ground to get to know how current games are made. and how much time they take. And basically Nintendo learned the mistake and they acquire more development studios, and now we get more, a lot more games from them pretty constantly. So yeah, it was a learning experience for them, I'm sure.
Yeah, because the games for the Switch feels like an absolute explosion. Like, there are just so many games available. And it makes me wonder how soon into the Wii U's life they started developing the Switch, because it is it is such, you know, with that game, the gamepad is such a bridge to starting to play in handheld while somebody else is still using the TV or something like we get to do with our Switches. But you really bring up a great point, Kevin, about the marketing, because it was really ambiguous at the time. And, you know, you watch those first trailers of the Switch and you know exactly what they're doing and you're like, whoa, this is cool. And with the Wii, you were like, huh, what's going on here? And I remember former coworkers, they would say, they would like tease me about the systems that I had. Like, why are you getting a Wii U? There's not going to be any support for that. There's no games for it. And I'm like, but I like Nintendo, you know, so I'm going to go with it. And I think I just kind of wonder if they held off developing more because they knew they were going to be making the Switch.
Right. Exactly.
That's an interesting point that I haven't thought about, Laura. Like, maybe they're just using this as like a, you know, like, oh, hey, here you go, Wii U. But for bigger and greater things like the Switch. But I mean, well, I mean, Nintendo got us. I mean, we have the Switch now, so. I do have one regret, though. I do wish I played more Wii U games, like especially Splatoon 1. I definitely missed out on that.
Right.
And I wish I could have played. Too. Yeah. So, but you know what? We're all playing Splatoon, you know, every now and then, so it's all good. See? Nintendo brought us back.
Exactly. And we have Splatoon 3 to look forward to, so we're good. We're good.
And but now we're going to be bad. We're going to be bad with another round of Nintendo mistakes. So back at again, Laura, do you have another one that you can share?
Well, I think since we were just talking about the Switch, and you guys know I love this console. I think it's my favorite console ever by a lot in some ways, but the Joy-Cons.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
That had to be
the Joy-Cons and the handling of the Joy-Cons. And I'm going to be really curious with, you know, the OLED coming out, how those Joy-Cons are going to respond. But I can't imagine they're any different than what we've been having. And, you know, I'm a family that has four Switches, so we go, you know, we're using our systems quite a lot. But so I expect a little wear and tear on my controllers, but I have friends that don't play as frequently as we do, and they're telling me that their controllers are drifting. And it's like, what has happened? Why isn't this really fixed? I just don't quite understand Nintendo's handling of it.
Yeah, and you know, it would be, I would say, easier to know what's going on if there wasn't a lawsuit going on. I guess even Nintendo would be a little more open about it. There's so many questions. Why hasn't it been fixed? Why hasn't Nintendo like more directly addressed what the issue is, or just been more open about it in general? It's definitely unusual to see a Nintendo product that fails in this way. Because they're really good with their quality of their products. I mean, they have been really good at addressing the issue. If you have them, you can basically send them your Joy-Con and you get them back repaired for free. But yeah, they're just not addressing the elephant in the room. And I think it's because they can't, really.
Yeah, and that wasn't always the case. The first pair that I sent in, they actually charged me. But they've taken care of it free of charge.
Hmm.
Man. Yeah, so there's been a slight improvement in how they're handling it.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't have charged you. That's lame. Oh, no.
But I know, right?
I know. How could they do that to you? I mean, especially if they knew the problem, too. But
yeah.
I think I agree with both of you guys. It is very disappointing because you look at Nintendo and you look at the things they make, and something as magical as a Joy-Con, like, it will always have an asterisk next to it, right? Because of the Joy-Con drift. The way they made the Joy-Cons is brilliant. I mean, it's attached to Switch. You can play two players right off the bat with one Switch. I mean, how cool is that? Like, I could be at a coffee shop and, you know, maybe I'm playing Mario Kart and someone's like, hey, like is that the Switch? I'm like, yeah. It's like, oh, do you want to play? I'm like, yeah, sure. Or, I mean, I would ask them if they want to play. And they go, oh, yeah, sure. And then we'll have just a cool Mario Kart session. Just and it'll be a split screen. That is the magic of a Nintendo console. And so it just paints to me. It pains me to see this, and like I've had Joy-Con drip too, albeit I did find a couple solutions to it, but I mean, I feel like with these sort of things, you shouldn't have to do that. Like, it should just work right out the box.
Right, and right.
I'm with you guys. I wish that Nintendo can be like, hey, we're sorry, we messed up on the Joy-Con drift, and they could explain why, but like you said, Serge, maybe they can't. Maybe they're legally not able to do that, which is also disappointing. Right. Because like, why does politics and legality have to be involved? Like, this is something that the fans need to know. I mean, when you're invested in a quality product, I mean, $300 for the Switch is not easy to spend. And when you're putting that much money into it, like, it has to be good. It's got to be, it just has to work. So, Nintendo, I'm looking at you. You got to address this one way or another. Yeah.
and I'm sure they know what the issue is. They probably have a fix for it, but again, they cannot implement it because of the lawsuit and because of the very negative feedback. Imagine if out of nowhere Nintendo announced Joy-Con Pro, and we know what the fix would be, right? But they wouldn't be able to say it in the box. That now with no drift, we would know. But yeah, they couldn't advertise it.
Joy-Con drift, and then it's gonna be like Joy-Con Pro drift. No, man, I don't know. I mean, that is... we'll see. I mean, Laura, I hope that the OLED model does have workable Joy-Cons without the drift. Maybe they'll just implement a fix and not tell anybody, but that will also be bad because
yeah.
They're not being transparent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, hard. We could file that under a mistake, too, not being transparent.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and, you know, you could argue the upgrades that the OLED has in terms of, like, the larger screen, the kickstand. I mean, that's a big one to me. And even having the LAN port, like, the things that they're adding to it does sort of feel like, oh, we should have done this originally, but we didn't quite realize it. And I just think that it must be so hard as a tech company to stay ahead of the curve in terms of development. Because sure, there's things you're just not going to be aware of that your customer base is going to want or need necessarily. But there is some, you know, play testing and quality control, like that kickstand that I'm like, why was that sent out? It's so unstable.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, with the kickstand that the original Switch has, I mean, I barely use it. I actually had to buy another kickstand by Hori, which, you know, shout out to Hori. They do make really good kickstands. There are three different angles that you can position your Switch. You can also use the same accessory to position your phone when you want to be on a lunch break and watch stuff, you know. I may or may not do that. But yes, it is a quality product. Shameless plug. Shout out to Hori. Everybody get this if you're not getting the OLED Switch. But yeah, it's, man, here at Nintendo, we have a lot to talk about. And we got more coming because Sergio has another one, I bet. Sergio, what kind of mistake would you like to address right here, right now?
I wanted to mention the GameCube and not specifically the system itself, well, sort of. Mostly the relationship that Nintendo had with third parties at the time, which was very, very bad. The GameCube hardly had any third-party games, any major ones at least. And I think the reason for that is because, you know, the companies didn't see the appeal on the GameCube because going back to Dragon's Comment, maybe Nintendo spent too much time and money on the disk drive and they kind of had to rush out the GameCube a little bit. We also know that Nintendo was working on the Wii as sort of an add-on to the GameCube. So I think in a way the GameCube was sort of a transitional console again. And because of that, you know, it had a lot of really good first-party games, but very, very few third-party games. That was a constant for Nintendo for a long time. And I think I would say the N64 was first, but the GameCube definitely didn't help things at all. So I think that was the console that cemented this mentality that Nintendo doesn't do well with third parties, which I think it's finally getting fixed with the Switch, but it definitely stuck around for a while, and I think it started with the GameCube.
So would you say that the GameCube, out of like the other consoles like GameCube, PS2, and Xbox, did you feel like GameCube was the weakest in that generation?
Only in the sense that it didn't get all the games that the other systems got. It did have Nintendo's very, very good games. I think I would even say Nintendo's first-party games for the GameCube were better than the ones on the N64. You know, a few exceptions here and there, and to each their own. But yeah, Nintendo really had a lot of really good GameCube games, and I think it's because they had to, because they knew that third parties just weren't there to begin with.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, well, you know what? I still have my GameCube somewhere, and even though it's collecting dust, I wish it had more third-party games, too. I mean, I would have liked to play a Final Fantasy game. Oh, come on, Nintendo. Why'd you do this to us? Actually, wait. Let me take a step back. Okay, fine. Crystal Chronicles was on the GameCube. I know, Daryl. It was on the GameCube. Right.
good save.
Yeah,
good
save.
Oh, it's like you could hear him, right?
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, Daryl likes that game. I might as well plug it in. Whatever. Not whatever. I know. It is a good game. I played a demo of it on Switch. Anyway, that's beside the point. So, look, guys. We had a lot of games that came from the past, right? On Nintendo. I'm talking like Donkey Kong Country, GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, come on now. What do all these franchises have in common?
Oh, here it comes.
Because, you know, this is a rare opportunity to address this. And I'm talking about Rare. And I'm talking about the fact that Nintendo and Rare just split off. And then Microsoft acquired Rare. And then, bam, you know, it just took off in just like the next level thing. I mean, why did this happen? Why did it have to happen? I mean, Rare is such a rare company. I know. Okay, I'm...
And can we throw Battletoads in there? I love that.
Oh, nice. Great. Yes. Great pull. I have never played Battletoads, but I've heard a lot about it.
Oh, you would love it. You would love it.
Oh, man. Okay, well, shout out to Battletoads, whoever made it. We love you on this podcast, and I do want to play your game. But, yeah, it was just so weird. I mean, some of my favorite games of all time has been from Rare. I mean, the Donkey Kong Country series, and I didn't own this game, but GoldenEye is a really fun game on the N64. And, you know, now you have, you know, Microsoft from 2002 and on making games like Gears of War and, you know, other franchises. See, I don't even know.
Sea of Thieves.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Did you see a Thieves? Oh, I didn't. Wow, I'm a terrible fan because I actually played their demo at E3 and I have a shirt from them. All right, well, apologies, Rare. But yeah, see? I mean, look, Rare has made all these sort of things happen with Microsoft, and why couldn't Nintendo after 2002? We don't know. It sucks.
Well, and perhaps that ties in with what Sergio was saying in terms of third-party support and relationships, you know. It sounds like there's something going on we just don't know about.
We'll never know. Maybe in an autobiography somewhere in the future. Nintendo, we're looking at you.
Yeah, one more of those that we definitely want to hear what really happened. Hopefully some year down the line we will. My understanding, yeah, I think Nintendo, they decided to sell Rare. And I believe one of the reasons was because Rare was taking too long to make their games. But honestly, if you think about it, was there really a problem considering the quality of the games they were making? I don't think so. Yeah, they definitely decided to stick with what worked. You know, they made sort of open world 3D platformers and they were really good. So I don't know. I don't get Nintendo sometimes. I would say it was a mistake to sell Rare. I mean, it didn't seem like Nintendo needed them at the time, but it didn't hurt to have them. They could have kept making very, very good games, and they wouldn't have been exclusive to the GameCube, and it definitely would have helped that system.
Yeah, it certainly hurts not to have them.
Yeah.
You just mentioned that it took them too long to make games. That's ridiculous. Like, how could they say that? Because one of their very own, Shigeru Miyamoto, had a quote saying that a delayed game is eventually good, a bad game is bad forever. I mean, where was that in the conversation? Come on, Nintendo. Man, I feel more negative now. This is ridiculous. I don't know. I've suddenly felt like a disappointing parent, and I don't know what else to say to comfort to comfort Nintendo in the situation. But you know what? It was done. It was a rare send off, and we'll never know what could have been. So there you go. But are there any other mistakes that Nintendo has made that any of y'all want to mention?
Well, I think the one for me that I've been wondering about is the online service. I want more games. I want, you know, other platforms. You know, I want to see some of the Nintendo 64 games or GameCube. It doesn't seem like it's impossible for that to happen. And the games that we are getting are so obscure, and you know, a lot of them anyway. And I never, you know, I want the nostalgia connection to that, you know, system, like we did when the virtual console, you know, with the Wii, like you could go on and be like, oh man, Dr. Mario is not a good example because you have that one, but that's like major nostalgia for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, games like Battletoads or even like World Cup soccer and some of the, like volleyball games and sports games, you know, that probably it's a licensing issue, I imagine, but I still want to know why we don't have more diversity of games and a broader spectrum of available games from different consoles on the online system.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And this actually brings up a question, Laura, that I want to ask you. Is it a mistake that Nintendo did not bring back Virtual Console to the Switch?
Yes, or at least to not have something more comparable. Mm. Because for someone who invested a lot, or not, I didn't invest a lot, but, you know, I paid for some games that I don't have access to now. Yeah. And it would be nice if I just did, by virtue of either them supporting something similar or giving people credit that did, you know, because they all know what purchases we made with our eShop accounts, right? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's there. They know what we've paid money for, and it would just be nice to have access to that in some way or another. So does it have to be a virtual console exactly? No, but something a lot closer to what we had, I would as a fan appreciate.
Yeah, it's true. And it's tough because, you know, there's that the point of view, the probably the one that Nintendo is going with, that yeah, we can keep selling our old games forever, but we kind of want to make something new. We want to focus on new games. And I mean, it looks like they definitely are. But it would also be nice to just have a little bit of consistency. Maybe if every year they released a new system on Nintendo Switch Online and they had the biggest games on it.
Yes.
Maybe, right. You know, maybe it wouldn't be all the games, but it would be sort of the at least the ones that people want the most. At least give us that, you know. And yeah, we wouldn't buy as many of those older games because you wouldn't have that many out there to begin with, and we would still be buying, you know, recent releases for the Switch and playing those games as well. But just be consistent. When the Nintendo Switch Online first started, you know, it had very good NES games. When the SNES games came out, they were really good as well. And now it's kind of been stagnant, and we didn't get a new console. At least it hasn't happened yet. It could. September is the anniversary of the service, but it doesn't sound like it's going to. So it would be nice to get something at least once a year and have major releases for that. And then again, you know, it always fades away anyway, the nostalgia a little bit. And we always go back to playing recent releases. So I don't think Nintendo would lose out on that much money. And it would definitely make nostalgic fans pretty happy.
Yeah. And you mentioned consistency. I mean, when the Nintendo Switch Online service came on, like, wasn't it a situation where they released online or old games on the online like once a month? I mean, that was really nice. Yeah. And then it started to be like maybe once every 2 months, and three and four. And right, it's like, oh goodness, like where have they gone? And I do agree. I want to see something new, a new console, a new old console.
Yes.
To come onto the online service. Like Game Boy Advance. I mean, look,
Oof.
Oh.
We need those.
Oh, here we go.
We
here
need
we go.
Those two. Only two going some games in existence to come back. And Advanced Wars. Well, actually, the remake is coming, so probably not that. Well, maybe. But definitely the Golden Sun games. And, I mean, look, you mentioned that we should bring back games that we really want. Like, where's Super Mario RPG? Legend of the Seven Stars. Right. I mean, look, I don't want to feel entitled because I'm not entitled, but I do have that on my wish list. Like, that would be great. But I do want to make a point that maybe the reason why they didn't do the Virtual Console is because they have this situation where they want to put more attention on their indie games, right? Because there's an influx of indie games so many have been ported to the Switch. So many have been made just for the Switch. It's just like, it's like selling hot like pancakes in a way. And if they were to have a Virtual Console, maybe that would detract attention. But then there's also the question of, well, can't they just balance it? Balance the production of releasing old games versus supporting indie games? It's a hard balance. I don't know. That's a very tough question that I don't even have the answer to. But yeah, it would be nice to have some sort of Virtual Console, though, or some more consistency. But yeah, that's a tough one. Well, we have some other listener answers to the question. And we have one from Cube, and he said that their biggest mistake to me is the sheer amount of beloved franchises they are willing to sit on without doing anything with them. I mean, that
man.
I mean, one comes into mind, F-Zero. You know, I've talked about it time and time again, even though I'm not the biggest F-Zero fan on this podcast. I'm probably the worst F-Zero fan among us three. But you know what? I still want an F-Zero game. But what other franchises can you guys think of that they're just sitting on and not doing anything about it?
Yeah, it's definitely one of Nintendo's sort of, I mean, yeah, I would consider a mistake. I'm definitely in agreement with Cube. You know, and every now and then Nintendo sort of decides to try to bring one back. They kind of try that with Kid Icarus on the 3DS, Kid Icarus Uprising. And as far as I know, the game did well. But again, you know, what happened to Kid Icarus after that? It's gone back to the death. I know Star Fox has been tried time and time again. I believe it's because Shigeru Miyamoto actually really likes that franchise and he really wants it to succeed, but it just doesn't take off in the R-Wing.
Yes.
Yeah, but it would be nice to just keep trying. Maybe imagine if Nintendo decided to try to revive a franchise maybe every other year. Ideally, I would want one every year, but every other year is fine, Nintendo. If you can manage that, just, I don't know, maybe next year bring out Mulmania. Yes. 2 years after that, put out a new F-Zero, maybe Ice Climbers. You know, just, they have so many franchises, some that some people have completely forgotten about. And, I mean, at least we're getting Metroid back. You know, that's cool. Pikmin hasn't really left, but it could. I mean, it's looking, I don't know, where's Pikmin 4? It's been in the works for over 4 years, so who knows. But yeah, I think Nintendo has a lot of talent and they kind of focus too much on Mario and Zelda in their bigger franchises. I think it's nice to spread things out a little more, Nintendo.
Maybe the Pikmin franchise is at a halt because we're eating all of them. I'm just kidding. But
I think you're just trying to squeeze all the memes in while the band hammer's gone.
You're right. This is intentional.
How many more you want to get out?
This is intentional. I have this one chance, maybe two, maybe five. I don't know, but I have this one chance, and I'm going to take it by the reins, and I am not sorry at all. 257% not sorry. Why 257? I don't know. I'm just feeling that confident. Look, this is the situation that we're in. And we gotta take what we can get. So.
Nice.
But yeah, Mulmania. I mean, I don't want to forget about that. I've never even heard of Mulmania until you mentioned it a while back.
Oh, see, another one that sort of came back, but it didn't stick around was Punch-Out.
Ooh, yeah, that's.
Oh, that was a fun game.
They got punched out.
The original. I don't know about the newer one. But.
Oh, yeah, the original. Oh, I mean.
And you got to do Nintendogs for Claire.
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Yeah. And I mean, so the newer IPs like Splatoon getting more attention, I don't mind because it's really good and well done. And I get why they're putting their energy there. But there are ones that I think, you know, you could satisfy some of the call outs for these beloved franchises by utilizing the online system. And I had forgot about bringing in Game Boy games, but if you brought even original Game Boy games back and, you know, you talk about the Advance or Color, like there's just so much they're sitting on. And I think you could even implement some sort of tier system. Maybe some people don't want the games to all these systems, but you could just pay a little bit more in your membership in order to have access to a certain console's, you know, flagship games or whatever they highlight from each system. And I would probably go for it because I just think that's awesome. I would love access to those games.
Yeah, yeah. And I did want to highlight real quick that this E3, we did get a lot of old franchises back. So Nintendo's at least trying. You know, we're getting Advance Wars. We're getting a new WarioWare. Mm-hmm. And we're getting Metroid back in a really big way. So, you know, we're getting some of them. It would be nice if we kept getting at least that amount every year. But yeah, we'll see. At least, yeah, we definitely see Nintendo making progress on this regard.
Yeah.
Is there one that you would really like to see back, Sergio? Like, I know Kevin wants F-Zero, and but it's like, is there one above all others that you really think they should put the time in?
That's tough because I want more Mania, but I know like probably like 5 people in the world know what that is, so it wouldn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, that's the one I always gravitate to. It was like Zelda, but fun. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I'm kidding. Ouch. It was just different.
Now, that's the biggest one, the biggest culprit of the show. No, but, oh man, that's awesome. No, but, you know, Momania and Golden Sun. Look, we've been waiting for a third game.
That one, yes, yeah, yes.
I mean, well. Well, okay. I mean, there's a reason why we do that. Because there is no third game. Yeah, no, but I would love a Golden Sun reboot. It would be great. I would take that over F-Zero 5 million times, man.
Oh, wow. Nice.
That shows how much of a fan I am for F-Zero, right? I mean, come on. This is a no-brainer.
And I do consider Golden Sun DS one of Nintendo's biggest mistakes, by the way. I don't know how involved they were in that game, but to me, they were, and that was a mistake for sure. I'm sure Kevin would agree.
I would agree, and I will, for this particular point in time, I will stop telling the joke about how there's only 2 to go in some of these games. I mean, look, the third game wasn't that great. I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit before, where it just wasn't as challenging. The story wasn't as gripping, and the quality of the game that was made, it did not live up to the standards that we were used to during the Game Boy Advance games. And for those who played it, y'all know what we're talking about. So, and that's why we only talk about the 2 Golden Sun games.
Yes. Yeah. Mystery solved.
Perfect. All right. Good work, Sherlock. Good work. Well, on to another topic another mistake that Nintendo has made. According to Filmmaker, the fact that their hardware tends to be on the low-end side or even an entire generation behind.
Mm.
Ooh, this is dicey. This is spicy. Sergio, I know you like deliciousness, but this is pretty spicy. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Is this a fair assessment? I mean, is this intentional that they have their hardware on the low-end side or even an entire generation behind? What are your thoughts on this?
It's hard to say. I think for a while they definitely were with the, especially with the GameCube and the Wii. They were a little behind in terms of specs. The Wii U sort of caught up, and the Switch is definitely more caught up. And I think Nintendo knew that, so they were kind of holding back on purpose. They knew there's only so much you can do. And that is not to say that the Switch and the PS5 are comparable. I definitely know that the PS5 can do pretty amazing things, but you know, there's only so much you can do in terms of gameplay, and I think Nintendo has reached a point where they can make any game they want and they look amazing. So I don't know if it's a mistake. I think some people would consider that a mistake because they're more inclined to into the graphic intensive games, and they may also play the PlayStation and the Xbox games, so they're more familiar with what can be done at the time. So they were more aware of this distinction that Nintendo had when they had the previous systems being pretty much behind in terms of technology. Although one point that I'm sure Filmmaker is trying to make here as well is that sometimes Nintendo doesn't implement things that are common sense, like the Switch not having Bluetooth. That's a really big one, and that's definitely them just being a little bit stubborn and saying, no, we want the system just for games, and we don't want these features that are common sense, honestly.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it really just boils down to what type of games you want to play. So for me, you know, I don't need 4K graphics and high FPS. I'm happy with the Switch. Whereas my son, and I'm sure many other gamers, are like, no, I want the best, you know, graphics and high fidelity and all of that. And so it's not a detraction for me, but I can see where it would be for others and for people who are fans and feel like, you know, like we heard it with the OLED, like a lot of people were upset that it wasn't an improvement in graphics, and they were expecting that, right, with the Pro,
right,
or
right,
what is not the Pro. yeah. But if it doesn't matter to you, it doesn't matter to you. But if it does, I can see where the disappointment would be. So I'll give them, you know, yeah, you can have that disappointment. But I don't know. I don't think it's as big as some of the other ones we've talked about tonight.
You hear that, haters? Laura just told you. You can have the disappointment.
But I do think we need to talk about some cheery things sometime soon.
We do.
This has been a sad episode.
I know. And I feel pretty bad because, like, we brought you on here and you're, like, the most positive person in the world. But, I mean, you know, I'm really glad to hear your take on these things because it's important. I mean, we do want to recognize the, you know, both the strengths and flaws of Nintendo. And I mean, look, for all that's worth, Nintendo has a history of not making super major upgrades in the same generation. I mean, it is a bit tough to expect Nintendo to make like a 4K graphical output, you know, docked mode or having 1080p handheld. Like, it's a pretty tough thing to do. And there's a lot of things to consider too. Battery life, the feasibility of the product. And while I do think they could have made that improvement, maybe it wasn't feasible for them. But there are things like what Serge mentioned, like Bluetooth. I mean, that is a no-brainer. I mean,
yeah.
Get with the times, Nintendo. Yeah. Get with the times. But you know what? It's all good because I think that there's a reason why we love Nintendo, right? Especially the Switch.
Many reasons.
Excuse me. You're right. There you go. Very good, Laura. Many reasons. And one being that having the Switch, playing with it, is pure fun. It's fun. It's addicting in a very you know, great way, very positive, and it creates moments for you and for the people you play with. I mean, that's the most important thing, right? It's not always about winning. It's not always about, you know, being the very best never was. It's about having fun in the moment and sharing those moments with others that you really care about. Because when you're part of the Nintendo community, you are part of a family. And that's the only cheesy thing I'll ever say on this episode. So
that was perfect, Kevin. That, like, totally brought us up. That was good.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. But you're just going to get one. You only get one. Maybe two. We'll see. But yeah, overall, we've had our talks and moments about what Nintendo has done wrong. But in the end, it's not about what they've, you know, how they started with these mistakes, about how they finish, right? They were able to rectify, well, not everything, but they were able to, you know, grow from their mistakes, some of them. And now they're here where they are at the forefront of the gaming industry in games, having fun. They're not perfect, but they are to us. And that's
nice.
Our topic of Nintendo's disappointment. You know, see, it didn't end on a bad note. It ended on a great note. And Well, there you go.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because today we just learned that the Switch outsold the PS3 and the Xbox 360. Just today, 89.04 million Switches have been sold. So, you know, Nintendo's doing pretty okay. And even after all of these quote-unquote mistakes that we talked about, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe they weren't really mistakes at all. Maybe it's just learning experiences and these experiences that got Nintendo where it is now. I mean, they're doing pretty fantastic. So I think we can all benefit from all of these quote-unquote mistakes or experiences, and we're all here together with Nintendo. So yeah, let's look to the future and let's see how things keep developing. Now we have this week's weekly question of the week for this week. We are asking, what game or genre do you gravitate towards during the summer months?
Ooh, I like this one.
Cool. So yeah, definitely let us know on our Discord. And with that, thanks for listening, everyone. We're going to jump out of here. But yeah, Laura, thank you for joining us for this special spicy discussion.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm going to go play Toadette in Mario Golf to cheer myself up.
Nice.
Yeah, there we go. Toadette.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We're going to jump out of here. If you haven't already, join our Discord group. The description for this episode has a link to it if you would like to join. We are also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And check out our blog at nintendojump.blogspot.com. Send us any feedback you have at nintendojumppodcast@gmail.com. The best way to support the show is through our Patreon page at patreon.com/nintendojump or by leaving a review for the show in your favorite podcast application. This is Sergio, and on behalf of Kevin and Laura, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a great week. Bye-bye.
I forgot the rest. I don't know.
That's my favorite boss theme in Final Fantasy VIII.
Oh,
I love it.
Right?
Oh my god.
It is. And you know what? It's called, well, I'm not gonna spoil it. It's called Final Fantasy VIII, Dr. Mario. Oh, man, look at that. Bye, everybody. Stay safe. Take care.
Bye-bye.